Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, it's Jane Hoffman. I'm rather subdued tonight after the McDonald managers are boneheaded and keep scheduling my son too many hours and at the wrong time. I'm going to bring John in to cheer it up. Tonight we're talking about Truman, not Truman Capote, but Harry Truman and an assassination attempt on his life while the White House is being renovated. Good evening.
Janessa Hoffman, how is thy holy hammer today?
It's been a challenging day. I'm working a 36-hour shift straight, so that might be part of the problem.
I think so.
I have to go back to work in 30 minutes, and I told Bob to call in faster than later.
Yeah, a subdued Hoffman, a subdued hammer. Is this possible?
No, it's not. Yes, it is, because I'm 54 and I'm slowing down.
We do that. Yes, I'm 55, so I know all about that. And it's the thing about it, too, for me, is, we run as fast as we normally do. It's just the time is slower, you know. It's not like we're not trying, and it's not like we're not hustling. It's just diminished returns. So it's just a new ball game, you know, to realize you can run as fast as you can instead of doing a 4-minute mile or a 5-minute or a 6-minute, suddenly it's a 7-minute, you know, when you used to be able to do it faster.
Right now, I don't know, it was an average day, but I find myself shutting down pretty fast if there's a conflict. So
yes.
I wouldn't say it was the greatest of days. Anyways,
yeah.
I want to say on a funny note, I was going to try to experiment with music last night, you know,
uh-huh.
and try to work with the Blog Talk Radio system. And I was just, right before I was going to do a pilot show, the whole computer thing practically shut down.
Wow.
So I got everything set back up. I played Like a Bridge Over Troubled Waters twice, and I also read original poetry and talked about my old love life from 2006 to 2009, and guess how many hits I got in 12 hours?
I will say 50.
21.
That's not bad.
I think people are really in the mood for love.
Yes, I think so. We all need love.
I know. Well, the person I was talking about, his father owns Western Costume Company in Burbank, so I don't know. I put him in the headliner, and then I took his last name off this morning because I thought it might be awkward. But guess who is here already? In the
house. Is it the Mighty Bob?
Hello.
Hi, Bob.
Hello.
What's going on?
Yeah.
What's shaking, Bob?
I clicked the red mic.
Oh, everything's about the same with me.
Great.
Yeah.
I do have to apologize to Bob. I was supposed to meet him this weekend and go over some ideas for promotion of his book and do some video work. And yesterday, I dog sit, as many of you may know, and it's becoming almost a full-time gig, which is cool. I need the money, but yesterday what came up was I had to dog sit for them to go to Mexico, and which is like 1 in the afternoon till 10 o'clock at night kind of gig. But it turned out I needed to go in early. So basically Friday night I was there from Friday from 3 to about midnight. Got back home. I had to come back in at like 8:30 or 9 or whatever to cover the early morning so doggy's bladder doesn't explode. And then come back again at 1. So it's like about a 16-hour day, and it just blew out my Saturday. So instead of getting everything ready so I could meet with Bob today, here I am.
I do.
Go ahead.
To be honest, I wasn't really expected you, because I thought we said a little while back that I really needed to get a couple of copies of the book before we can schedule to get together.
Yeah.
And you had told me that you don't want a casual get-together. You want a get-together to be a work session.
Right. We want to work it out,
yeah,
get things going. So.
Yeah.
So it's working out okay.
Yeah.
And the dog survived. They went to Mexico. I survived everything. And here we are with the hammer.
I'm the hammer.
Hammer. Oh.
Yes.
I'd rather be the slammer tonight. Okay, well,
so,
let's move on to the real topic. We all, both John and I are working too many hours. My son and I just got in a fight because his McDonald's manager keeps scheduling them at the wrong time. But let's get on to the topic. There were two assassination attempts on President Harry S. Truman. The second of the two happened on November 1st, 1950. By the way, that's All Saints Day. It was carried out by two Puerto Rican pro-independence activists, Oscar Collazo and Griselda Torresoya, with the president residing in the Blair House because the White House was under construction. Torresoya mortally wounded White House police officer Leslie Kofet, who killed him in return fire. Secret Service agents also were involved and wounded. Secret Service agents also wounded Collazo. President Truman was not harmed. I think he was taking a nap in a room, and by the time he woke up, all the hullabaloo was over with. And also, this officer that died, Leslie Kofeld, it was the only time that someone died in the line of fire while someone was trying to kill a president. In other words, when JFK died, nobody else died, and when Lincoln died, nobody else died. And if there were any more assassination attempts, I don't know about them. So, Bob, is this a topic you're knowledgeable about? Because the first time I heard about it was Friday night.
A little bit. But I think some little historical background is that the United States had historically was opposed to colonialism. We threw off colonialism from the British in the Revolutionary War, and then in the several decades after the Revolutionary War, we were opposed to the Spanish colonialism in Latin America. The Monroe Doctrine came out somewhere around 1820 that said that once any European power had been kicked out, the U.S. Navy would guarantee that they don't come back, and in the Spanish-American War of 1898 had mixed feelings because ostensibly it was to remove all of Spain's colonies from Spain, and we took Puerto Rico, Cuba, the Philippines, the Marquesas, Spanish, and then there were five that we took away from Spain. And there was a strong anti-colonial, sentiment amongst rural America, and the idea that the United States, having freed these countries from Spain, that we might keep them as our own colonies. A lot of people in this country were upset about that in 1898, 1899, 1900, etc. So what are we going to do with these former Spanish colonies?
That we didn't hear about it in the history books is because it was a discolored time, or because there was not enough security at the Blair House, or that it just doesn't seem important after 60 or 70 years?
It just doesn't seem important after 60 or 70 years. At the time,
it was an assassination attempt. I mean, I'd like to have known about it before I turned 54 years old.
Yeah, and the other assassination attempt against Truman was attempted by the Israelis,
Well, I didn't even know about that one. Now, I do know a lot about inside coups and outside jobs. Like, for example, Eisenhower, the Dulles brothers in Britain tried to overthrow Mossadegh in Iran. I know about certain scandals,
yeah.
but I didn't know anything about this. And it kind of bothers
yeah.
me.
Well, we gave independence to Cuba about 1920. We gave independence to the Philippines in 1946. You know?
Was it? Did Cuba even care if we sanctioned that? Now you and John hash it over. I have to step away for 60 seconds, and you and
yeah.
John hash it out. I'll be right back.
So if I can continue blabbing for a minute here.
Oh, go for it.
The one of the problems is that in Puerto Rico, most Puerto Ricans wanted the United States to stay. They liked their semi-colonial status.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who were for independence were a minority. You know, the...
Right.
Yeah, and
which you could understand if you're in a poor condition financially, and here you know you're staying, you could call it like you're hanging out with the rich people, right? And it's like you're getting some of the benefits of being around money.
Yeah,
which is what I'm doing. You know, it's like, you know, people go, why am I dog sitting and putting up with a lot of hassles? It's because, well, I could work a security job or McDonald's. I could work at 10 at night till 6 in the morning shift. Or I can make $20 an hour cash, you know, watching a dog that
right.
probably isn't going to rat me out compared to, you know, the people who have to hustle
yeah.
at these other jobs. So you go, you know, you hang around money. I give you an example. Sometimes I walk in and I bump into different people, and all these people pay, you know, anywhere from $30,000 to $60,000 a year to live by the water. And one guy, you know, I hear him talking about deals all the time. And I finally asked him, because I'm in, you know, kind of the music and entertainment biz, even though I'm not an active player, but I'm on the outside. He's always talking about deals, and I just casually mentioned, it's like, is this what you do? Because I have a, you know, movie script with some friends and music and on. He's like, yeah, I work for RKO, you know, Pictures. That's what we do. That's what I do. That's my job. And you sit there and go, you don't get that at McDonald's, you know. I mean, it's
right.
rare. It's like, hang around money. So I could see the, you know, most of the Puerto Ricans going, we want to, you know, it's like, we don't care if you're kind of your servants. It's like the food is much better being your servant than being independent.
Well, U.S. companies had tax incentives to build factories in Puerto Rico. So, you know, U.S. companies provided, you know, a reasonable amount of employment down in
right.
Puerto Rico, as well
yes.
as Puerto Ricans who were living in the U.S. would, you know, could send money back to their families. And It was
kind of win-win,
advantageous situation for Puerto Ricans. Meanwhile,
mm-hmm.
in World War II, you know, the British and the French had their colonial empires, you know, before World War II, and during the war, they weren't in a position to enforce colonialism, and
mm-hmm.
you know, the French and the British both came very close to losing their colonial empires because they didn't have the troops to enforce it. You know, and France, for example, wanted victory over Japan to be delayed until France could send their troops back to French Indochina. You know, I mean, you know, they wanted to have a different strategy for the British, too, also wanted to have a different war strategy that would enable them to hang on to British India. But
how the world has changed, huh?
Yeah,
so changed.
Can I interrupt the show? That was interesting. I just wanted to, because I put the headliner under the assassination, I just want to read a few sentences so my audience
yeah.
isn't disappointed. The two Puerto Rican men realized their attempt was near suicidal and that they would likely be killed. Nonetheless, they wanted to bring world attention to government killings of rebels and associates in Puerto Rico and the need for Puerto Rican independence. Torresoyo, a skilled gunman, taught Collazo how to load and handle a gun. They took a train to D.C., and they reconnaissanced the area. Then Torresoyo approached the Pennsylvania Avenue from the west side with his partner Oscar, walking up behind a Capitol Police officer, Donald Birdsell, who was standing on the steps of the Blair House. White President Truman napped on the second floor. Collazo shot at Birdsell, but failed to chamber a round in it, and the gun did not fire. After fumbling, Collazo fired the weapon just as Birdsell was turning to face him and shot the officer in the right knee. After hearing gunshots, Secret Service agent Vincent Mroz, M-R-O-Z, ran through a basement corridor and stepped out on a street-level door on the east side of the house, where he opened fire on Collazo. Mroz stopped Collazo on the outside steps with a bullet to the chest. The incident has been described as the biggest gunfight in Secret Service history. The two other officers took part in shooting the attackers. Meanwhile, Torresoyo had approached a guard booth at the west corner and took White House police officer Leslie Kofelt by surprise, shooting him at least four times at close range and mortally wounding him with a 9mm German Luger. Three of the shots struck Kofelt in the chest and abdomen, and the fourth went through his tunic. So, you know, this is in the days before, I mean, who really had the technology to plan something like this back then? I thought it was, it sounds like an impulsive gesture on my part. Well, how about, what do you all think?
I was going to say, you know, Truman, in some ways, I mean, in my era, growing up in the like 60s and 70s, you heard a lot about JFK and you know, Nixon with Watergate and on, Jimmy Carter with the Iran hostage thing and Reagan. So those are kind of the people that stand out in my life. But with Truman, you know, he was very significant because he did several things that were important. He endorsed and recognized the State of Israel. You know, it's biblically is very significant. There was a lot of controversy as to whether to do it. We'd just gotten out of World War II. They were afraid they would upset the Saudi Arabians. And he was even warned that, you know, the U.S. was playing with fire with nothing to put it out. And basically,
Truman...
Have you
ever heard of the Truman Doctrine?
Finish
what you had to say, and then we'll go on to that next.
And I was going to say, you know, it says very, you know, several things are very significant. He was vice president when Roosevelt won, and then Roosevelt died in office. So he actually became president through Roosevelt's death. And then in 48, he ran for the president, and they had the infamous headline that he lost to Dewey in Chicago. They printed the headline, Dewey defeats Truman, and he's holding it, you know, with the famous picture when he actually won. And in regards to that assassination attempt, I guess he had put an ad onto the White House, which people didn't want. They just kind of felt it just was an eyesore. But in that process, they realized that the White House was just an old Kremlin, structure. So whatever they built started to collapse. So he had to stay at the Blair house or residence, and which kind of, you know, affected this whole situation.
Well, the thing about Harry Truman is that he was kind of a law and order guy, and he started the doctrine of containment, which meant that back around the time that Russia, you know, they usurped that part of East Germany, and then they were embarking on expansion in places like Czechoslovakia and Hungary. So Truman was trying to stop them by giving aid to countries that were not going to become communistic.
Right, I guess he supported NATO too. So there's a lot of that after World War II. There's a lot of important things.
Well, he was the first person to coin the world policeman in the sense that he was trying to control countries by aid and stopping the spread of communism. But he also helped assist in the Greek Civil War from 46 to 49. And he said if Turkey and Greece didn't get money in a timely manner, that they would go communistic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Bob has something to say about this.
Oh, just that. the beginnings of the Cold War doesn't really have too much to do with the Puerto Rican assassination attempt.
Well, I know, but John was talking about other things Truman did.
Just kind of his significance, and like if it had been successful, how it would have altered, you know, some historical events that we, because it was a very incredible transition from World War II to, like, we even though we were world power, really became significant, you know, from the 50s and 60s, and the moves that he made were also significant to that process.
Well, a relevant question would be, if there were rebels in Puerto Rico being killed, is that, can we hold Truman fully responsible, or is it sort of like ISIS nowadays where Obama is being blamed for chaos there when he has really nothing to do with it? But except for they're not an American outpost.
Well, the pro independence I hate to use the word extremist in Puerto Rico were not popular. You know, they had a problem about a year after the Truman assassination attempt. Truman had a plebiscite held. 82% of Puerto Ricans supported the present situation, relationship with the United States. You know, it's like.
Which makes you kind of wonder.
82% of Americans wanted Puerto Rican independence?
No, 82. Well, that may be true also, but 82% of Puerto Ricans wanted the semi-colonial status to continue.
It's financially beneficial for them.
Yeah. There were only a small number, a relatively small number of Puerto Ricans who were in favor of independence, and they were frustrated with their fellow Puerto Ricans who were not pro-independence, you know? And this is what the reason for the rebellions that were going on inside Puerto Rico against the Puerto Rican government, because the Puerto Rican government was not advocating for independence.
Well, here's the rebels
that were killed.
Here's a question: are we, you know, historically, just as on an opinion shooting the breeze here, are we better served by doing a little bit of colonialism and spreading our brand, as it were? And as we go out, we do stuff in the world, and then we kind of we blow things up and then we try to fix it and leave and kind of let it go back to what it was, as compared to a Roman Empire, Greece Empire, you know, just different dynasties. And as you can't build an empire or dynasty, I guess the problem is, unless you go and marry and live in those countries, you always have a country that's despising you, you know, that wants to get you out, and eventually over a period of time, the homeland wins. You know, maybe that's the issue, but are we better served just being as we are, just contained here, or expanding?
You know what, John? That's an old-time philosophy. Back in the late 40s to mid-50s, the world was driven a lot more by idealistic notion. The Bush Doctrine failed. Democracy failed in Iraq and Afghanistan. Go ahead, Bob. I'll continue after your comment.
No, I was just saying that I've even forgotten.
Well, let me continue and I'll rev your memory. The fact of the matter, John, now this might sound naive, but the world was a lot more innocent back then. For example, nobody knew the capacity of Adolf Hitler, but they certainly found out what his capabilities were.
Right.
America was scared shitless to have communism spread because after seeing totalitarian governments at work during Hitler's regime, they were scared to death and they didn't want the world to be overtaken. That's why we sacrificed, I believe it was around 50,000 men in the Korean conflict. But America's made a lot of mistakes. We went to Vietnam after the French had exhausted themselves there. And by the mid-70s, people didn't want war. The fact that we went to Afghanistan and Iraq for 13 or 14 years is pretty pathetic, too, in one sense. I mean, we are trying to delve out evildoers, as Bush would say. But, I mean, we only have so much impact. We can't, you know, we had a coalition in 91 under Daddy Bush in Iraq with Kuwait, but the fact that terrorist attack changed up the ante, but it doesn't mean that we're going to overcome all the evil in the world.
Right. I kind of have a personal philosophy, and that is America is a wonderful, brilliant, once-in-a-lifetime experiment that is so beautiful that I just want to appreciate it and treasure it. Because I always tell younger kids, I said, you know what's the most efficient form of government? And they go, what? A dictator. I said, you know, you want a dictator wakes up one morning and says, we want yellow streets? It's yellow streets, you know. We want to move the airport? Tear it down. You try to do the same thing in America, it's like, okay, we've got, you know, EPA reports, environment, you know, we got to do studies, we have to do funding, we got to go through all this whole process, and it's beautiful, but the problem is after 250-some years, the process has become so legalistic, so red-taped, so much things that it starts to become inefficient. And when that happens, people start getting frustrated. Like, how many people really believe we can change, you know, the way things are? It's like, you know, it's like we vote, but is anything really going to happen? I'm just this little plebe in the chain of command.
Bob
so,
and John, I'll be right back, okay? Sorry.
So I was going to say, you know, kind of looking at biblical prophecy, God's not a democracy. I mean, he just lays down the rule, and that's going to be the ultimate order. And historically, we've always had kings, dictators, rulers, czars, and so forth. And we've getting, you know, with the U.S. And parts of Europe to have democracy or representative type forms of democracy, it's just really a kind of a blessing that we're not under a dictator or ruler. For the most part, for me. How do you feel, Big Bob?
When I was in college, one of my college professors said that he was in favor of monarchy and that we Americans should get down on our knees and ask Queen Elizabeth II to take us back.
Wow.
You know, and there are a lot of people, especially in European countries, who, I'm not saying in 2014, but historically, you know, who have felt that maybe we're better off under the Hohenzollerns or the Habsburgs or, you know, whatever European monarchies collapsed in the...
I guess the upside is if you have a brilliant person, if you have a great leader, you know, if you have someone that's wise like Solomon, or someone who has a heart for God like David, it's a beautiful thing. But then, you know, it can shift so quickly. A guy can die, and then the next king comes in, as we see historically in the Old Testament, and then it gets rotten really fast. And especially... when you have kids that grow up spoiled, or their fathers turn them in a negative way, and their children come out a little bit worse, and it's a cycle. So, like, that's the upside is you can get a really brilliant guy and change things very quickly. The downside is, in one heartbeat, you can have Hitler or you know, the Ayatollah or whoever, and you're kind of stuck unless you get a military coup.
Guys,
so
we're at the 30-minute mark, and I have to go punch back into work. So you guys are going to have to take the show for the last 15 minutes. I hope you don't mind. And
no, okay. We'll run with it.
My final thought is just that, you know, unfortunately, I see the exposure of America. We're always wrapped up in some kind of controversy, and I think we kind of followed Britain. I wish we would have stayed a little more pure, a little more remote, and a little more Swedish. But with that, I'll let you guys finish the show.
I kind of go, you know, I would say at heart, I would kind of echo a little bit of what Jane said. But the problem I ran into going through life is it's a jungle out there, and there are violent, evil people out there, regimes, dictators, godless people, even people who with God, you know, like Muslim extremists that use it for bad purposes. And I have to say, I like the kind of strong military approach to that. And in fact, I don't like it, but it's effective. And I have to say, in a personal level, it's kind of what I'm living, even though I'm a nice, mellow person, and I like nice and kind and all that mushy stuff. But with confronting bad people and you know, problems, it just doesn't work that well. And so I kind of like the strong arm type of thing, and, you know, kind of the Reagan approach or the W approach or what, but a smart, strong arm.
Yeah.
You know, not stupid.
America is probably the country where it works the worst. They have problems in Europe, but nowhere near as much as we have it, because we have a legal system.
Mm-hmm.
It was originally based upon the British, but we've taken it too far. We have government by the corporations for the corporations, but also government by the lawyers of the lawyers for the lawyers. The lawyers always win. In any law case, the lawyers on both sides win.
Right.
We have a legal system which is set up to be maximally inefficient in securing justice.
Right.
We do not have a justice system. We have a legal system which serves the interests of lawyers, does not serve the interests of the bulk of the people.
The lawyers always win.
Yeah. Their clients always have rights, you know. But my clients' rights. The result is that so many guilty people have been released. Consider O.J. You know, even though he's, you know, in jail right now for, you know, armed robbery. But we have a legal system that does not produce justice. What was the supposed black saying, "You buy you a piece of justice."
Right.
Yeah. And other countries in Europe don't have a legal system like what we have.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a 12-man jury is a very, very bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some European countries that have a system that where you go before a panel of three judges. The three judges can ask any damn thing they want. There is no exclusion of evidence. There is no, that's not allowed. The judges can ask any damn thing they want.
And to go along with that, I'll give you this. I got, you know, as we all do, the dreaded jury summons, you know, several times in my life where you just, you know, you go through that whole process and you show up and you wait all day and then they're going to call you, but they don't. And then you come back the next day and, you know, by the end of the week they go, "We really don't need you." And there's like a couple hundred people showing up there to be part of this 12-person process. And I kind of look at it this way. Maybe I'm, you know, obviously if I was on trial for my life or something, I would probably want them to look at 400 people. But my thought is jury of the peers is it's people in you know, the community. So it's like grab the first 12 people, and unless one of them's an armed robber or, you know, has some extreme prejudice, it's like they're in. Black, white, Chinese, whatever. I'm not going to screen, you know, 200 people to get the perfect jury. It's just jury of the peers to me is like it's 12 people on the street, line them in, this is what you think, and this is what you get.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to live with that. Go ahead.
Our jury system is very bad, you know.
Because it destroys the faith in the system. I'm like, I want to get out of there. I want to say, listen, O.J., you know, O.J. didn't do it, right? You want to wear they even have these signs like you can't wear controversial shirts because they don't want you to get up there, you know, when they're trying to screen you and have you, you know, have some kind of political statement on there. It's like, this is America. It's like, why, you know, and the only one reason why people want to get out of it is like, I don't want to be caught up in just all the bureaucracy and the waste of time and the legalism. It's like, you know, give me the case and let's go. It's like, oh, we're going to go over every point. What am I going to allow? What am I not going to allow? Oh, he shot and killed someone, but we didn't read him as Miranda. Well, I understand how important that is because my mother's maiden name is Miranda, Jenny Miranda Yoder. I used to say whenever she'd do something wrong, I'd say, "Did you read her Miranda rights?" You know, like she did something like in a personal level, and they go, "No, I didn't read her." I said, "Well, she's free. You know, you didn't read her Miranda rights." But I think we've taken it so far to the extreme. Like, I don't care if you read him your rights or not. It's like he shot and killed someone. You know, it's but you know, we have our due process, and I do appreciate it. But I just think we go overboard on this stuff sometimes.
Yeah, and we run our jails entirely wrong. Just everything, the whole legal system is set up in such a way that it benefits lawyers and certain other groups of people.
There's no concept of restitution, which is what Eye for an Eye is all about. It's like, okay, you robbed me $100, give me my $100 back, that's all, and stop doing crime. I don't want you locked up for 30 years or do this or do that, you know, or try to rehabilitate you. It's just, you know, spend the rest of your life making money to pay back my family, you know, or something. But we don't have that. We don't, you know, it's like that would be cruel and unusual and punishment.
And
how
and
dare.
This, of course, morphs into our education system and how dysfunctional that is, how it serves the needs of certain groups at the expense of, you know, kids not being properly, not only properly educated, but also not properly disciplined. Schools, in addition to imparting information, they're supposed to impart correct behavior to students, and they once did. Now they do not.
Question, because I know I drifted it a bit, but I wanted to make it relevant to what our life is. Some people go, well, who cares if, you know, Truman was assassinated? It's like, yeah, well, it affects because of how the decisions he made. And so I guess the question is colonialism. Good idea, bad idea, outdated idea?
First, the several different major colonial powers, they all operated differently.
Mm-hmm.
And even one particular colonial power, Britain, you know, operated one way in Kenya and a totally different way in Nigeria.
Good point.
You know, with the result that, you know, the Kenya's government is relatively stable and honest and so forth, relatively. Nigeria's government is and always has been a nightmare.
Problem with colonialism, it's almost like corporate headquarters trying to, you know, like, say it's in New York, and they're trying to give you guidelines for how to run your business in L.A. or in, you know, Mexico or another country. And the people that live in that area go, what the heck do they know about the job, right? And I've seen this even in jobs where management will make a decision without asking the line troops. You know, it's like... You chose a system, a computers, or a method of how you're going to deal with your clients, but you didn't talk to me like how we interact with our customers. I'll give you an example. We had this one thing where we went to automated statements. So instead of mailing, like the old school stuff, we everything's emailed. And they emailed out a request, like, do you want, you know, the hard copy? We'll mail it out. But it was all about money. We just didn't want to spend the postage. We didn't want to print the paper. We wanted to make them print it. And the point is, our management said, hey, they'll just have to learn and adjust to it. And the new manager, like the younger kids, the old dad who used to run everything, who passed away, he would always say, how does this impact our customers? Do they want this? And I had so many customers say, listen, it's like, this is inconvenient for the way we run our business. We need a hard copy. You know, we can always order from someone else who will. And that's kind of the mentality, I guess, with colonialism is you're trying to rule from afar as you get bigger, and you lose connection with the reality of the people that live there, and they start to despise, you know, kind of like an absentee landlord.
Yeah, and the people that live under the colonial rule, they imagine. That they envision what the colonial power is removing from their country, mm-hmm. and that if they imagine that if they were free and ran their own country, how much better all their lives would be. And when they get the freedom, it doesn't happen the way they imagined it. You know, they have inefficient, you know, their own domestic that replaced the colonial mechanisms. Their own mechanisms are much more inefficient. Corruption is 1,000 times higher. Mm-hmm. You know,
I guess if you expand, you almost have to. If you want to bring your brand, you do that, but you have to, in a way, personalize it and make it feel like it's theirs. You know, that's one kind of trick you learned
right.
with working with people.
Yeah.
If you're always throwing your idea and it's your idea, people start to despise it. But if you plant the idea in their mind where they think they thought of it, even though it was your idea, they embrace
yeah.
it and they fight for it. You know, people have pride and self-image, so they're going to work hard for their idea. Whereas if they feel it's always imposed on them and they have no choice in it, it becomes a prison, even if it's a better idea. So that's one thing I kind of learned working with upper management is, like, I just plant the ideas in their mind. I give you an example. One time there was this, we had an option to buy this other company in Century City. It was very strategic to what we do because of the legal system, and we used to sell tabs, exhibit tabs. And they had a print shop there that would print tabs in Century City. And I proposed this to the management, and they were like, we're not really interested. And so I started telling some of the salesmen, because we worked in office supply, I said, man, if we could get our money together and buy this thing, you know, we'd be set. You know, we'd have our own, we'd print our own exhibit tabs for these lawyers in Century City. We'd be right there. We'd corner the market. But I couldn't organize enough. We didn't have enough money to pull it off.
Right.
And then, but I kept telling him, oh, it'd be such a great idea. Well, about 3 months later, we had the announcement, our company bought that store in Century City. They were so proud, and like, oh, we're expanding, we're doing this. It's like, I pitched that idea to you guys 3 months ago, you know, and you gave me the finger, right? It's like, what do I know, dumb punk? And
they
just
want to give, they don't want to give you credit because some vice president.
Yes, it's Jihad Jane. What have you done with the hammer?
I just took somebody out.
It's the sickle. It's the sickle in Hammer coming in right now.
Hammer had to get something in the car, and she came back to hear what you were all talking about.
Yes. Oh, we talked about world domination and all that good stuff.
It sounded pretty good. I listened without saying anything. So I just wanted
amazing.
To say good night. You guys have, you have about 3 minutes left, so I'll let you go. But thank you for joining me tonight.
Thank you for having
You're
us.
You're welcome.
Here's the go away song. Good night.
We promise not to plan a coup over the show while you're gone.
Plan a coup to rescue me from the tundra. It's below 30 tonight.
Really? Oh, man.
It's rough up here today.
Now you know why I stayed out west. I couldn't hang.
I know. Put thy holy sunshine down. Good night, Bob. Thank you for joining us. I'll let you guys close.
Good
you
night.
Have 3 minutes. 3 minutes.
It's about 20 seconds, but...
Yeah.
I even forgot what I was saying before she interrupted.
We're kind of talking a little bit about colonialism and about will it work and how people have under it kind of have this illusion that their life would be better without it, and, especially a poor country. And just, I kind of mentioned how, I guess the only way to make it work is to let them feel like it's their government, their way of doing things with a twist, you know. It's like, keep your brand, but let them have the personal pride of running it. Otherwise, they're going to just despise every moment of it.
Huh. Oh, I remember that you were talking about your company doing something in Century City. And
right.
And they turning down your idea. And my gut reaction is that they said no because they don't want to give you any credit because some vice president wants to present it as his idea, and it justifies his bonus, you know, for that year.
Right.
And yeah.